Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this meeting of the Kingborough Council on Monday the 7th of June 2021. I'd like to declare the meeting open and welcome everyone in attendance and advise that our meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. So in accordance with Council's policy, I'll just request confirmation from the General Manager that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
Thank you, General Manager. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners on the land on which we meet today, the Tasmanian Aboriginal community, and pay my respect to Elders past, present and emerging. Attendees tonight, we have Councillor Sue Bastone, Councillor Gideon Cordova, Councillor Flora Fox, Councillor David Grace, Councillor Christian Street, Councillor Steve Woss, Councillor Paula Reet, and myself, Councillor Westwood. Our staff, we have General Manager Gary Arnold, Director Engineering Services Mr David Reeve, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services Mr Daniel Smee, Manager of Finance Mr Tim Jones, Manager of Development Services Ms Tasha Tyler Moore, Compliance Coordinator Mr Scott Basham, Media and Communications Advisor Ms Sam Adams, Customer Services Coordinator Ms Kelly Nichols and Executive Assistant Mrs Amanda Morton. Apologies tonight from Councillor Amanda Midgley. We'll start by confirming the minutes of the previous meeting of Council held on the 17th of May. Do I have someone to move?
So moved.
Thank you, Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Bastone. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Minutes are confirmed. Workshops held since the last Council meeting. On the 24th of May, we had a workshop on the Kingborough Waste Services, and on the 31st of May, we had a workshop on the budget. On to page 2, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have, or member of staff, have anything they need to declare in relation to tonight's meeting agenda? Councillor Cordova.
Thanks. Just with relation to the community grants section, I met with some of the people who are mentioned in the grants, and I'm also a board director of Gymnastics Tasmania, and there's one from Kingborough, but I'll still remain and I'll still vote. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Oh, Councillor Fox, sorry, missed you there.
Thank you, that's okay. On page 35, the 15 Home Avenue, Blackmans Bay, I attended a function but don't have a pecuniary interest and intend to stay in the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Transfer of agenda items. Are there any items which a councillor believes should be transferred from this agenda to the closed agenda? No. We move on to Code of Conduct panel determination. I would like to invite Councillor Grace to speak to Council.
Thank you very much, Acting Mayor. Just briefly, do you mind if I stand?
That's fine.
I accepted the Code of Conduct decision totally, and I will abide by that which was written on the 3rd of May that came to the Council. As I said, I accept the determination of the Code of Conduct panel. I sincerely apologise for any inappropriate words I said at the workshop led to Councillor Reed feeling physically threatened. I now realise that I need to be more careful how I express my words. I am generally remorseful and never intended to upset Councillor Ritt. I would also like to apologise for any embarrassments I may have caused my fellow councillors and staff of this council. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Your apology is noted. Would you like the opportunity to reply, Councillor Reed?
Thank you.
I acknowledge and I accept Councillor Grace's apology, and I'm pleased that you are here tonight so that I can say to you what I wanted to say to you on the 3rd of May. And that was, threatening me was not okay. You made me feel very unsafe. Please think about how you use your words in the future and how damaging they can be. And please learn from this.
Madam Chair, I don't want to comment on that any further. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Moves on to page 3, questions on notice from the public. Questions without notice from the public down the bottom of page 2. Are there any members of the gallery who would like to ask some questions about something that's not in the agenda tonight? Please state your name and address.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Michael Casey, Kingston. Mayor, I'm unaware of a COVID threat update by the Tasmanian Health Department. So who is paying for the 3 COVID security officers at the main door for tonight's meeting? State or federal government?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Thank you for the question, Mr. Casey. They are members of council staff. Council will be paying.
And they are here for COVID security, as they informed me when I asked why they, I had a name to tick off, but why they were there and haven't been for the last 5 years when I've been attending meetings. They said they were COVID security.
Is that a question, Mr. Casey?
Well, it is a question. Yeah, that I was informed that they were COVID security. Are they COVID security? And I realised because they told me their names, they work for the council. But are they COVID security? And will they be here at every other meeting to ensure that everyone that attends the meeting adheres to the COVID rules?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, thank you again for the question. As I said in answering your first question, they are members of staff. The terminology was probably appropriate on this occasion. The reality is that under the state government COVID requirements, we have a limited seating capacity. We have registrations in advance for attendance through Eventbrite, and tonight was the first council meeting where we had people trying to get in. We actually expanded the capacity to its maximum, from 12 to 16 members in the gallery, and then we still had another person that wanted to attend after we had reached that capacity. That's why the staff were there tonight, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you, General Manager, for that explanation, and I have to accept that. But if you remember when the Kingborough Football Club packed this place, there was not any security whatsoever. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Casey. Does anyone else have any questions without notice? Thank you. We move on to questions on notice from the public. Question 1, annual rates increases. A question from the Kingborough Ratepayers Association. Question 2, sale prices of public land and use of funds from the Kingborough Ratepayers Association, with a response on page 3 to both of those. Page 4, a question on cost savings from Karen Tantari on behalf of the Australian Services Union. Questions without notice from councillors. Councillor Grace.
Madam Mayor, I've raised this question before, but after seeing tonight, I'm wondering why we haven't got security over at the new playground, where we're getting, what, 3,000 people in there per day. And as I understand, there's no hand cleaning or anything there to protect any code. And in fact, I believe there is not even cleaning of the playground equipment. So that's my question.
Council has instigated two separate security patrols 7 days a week, if that's the type of security you're talking about, but maybe Mr. Smee could provide some more information in relation to our COVID safety plan.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Being an outdoor venue, the maximum limits for the playground differ greatly to an indoor venue. It's completely impractical for council to be cleaning that equipment after each use. Users do so at their own risk and with their own requirements to uphold public health requirements, and that includes social distancing. But as the Acting Mayor has indicated, we do have a security presence at the playground. However, we can't maintain a full-time presence there to monitor numbers, and indeed the maximum numbers there at any time do fall below the required limits for an outdoor venue.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have two questions. The first is in relation to the playground. I've been approached by several people regarding the fact that there is not a drop-off bus point there for when people come with their child, a small group from a childcare or from a school, and the parking for the bus means that that is in front of the hub and they have to actually try and cross the road. So could we have a look at having some parking for a bus in that area, please?
Mr. Smee.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. It's an issue that has been raised by bus drivers. We have identified a location and we just need to get the signage up for a dedicated bus park, yes.
Excellent. Thank you very much. My second question is on dead animal removal. It seems to be getting worse and worse as we become more built up. There are more dead animals within what I would say the metropolitan area of Kingston. And I think I remember in the budget, there's a budget line for dead animal removal. Is this via a contractor or is it council staff that do the animal removal?
Thank you. I do remember that budget line item, but I might get some clarification from Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, council normally does the dead animal removal.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My question is to the General Manager. General Manager, could you please provide an update on the progress of the assessment of Kingborough's local provision schedule for the new statewide planning scheme and any progress through the Tasmanian Planning Commission?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. I will throw to my colleague, Ms Tyler Moore, for an update, not that I'm aware of any.
Through you, Acting Mayor, we provided our LPS to the TPC in October last year. We had a post-lodgement conference and we've responded to that, sent them a response on the 1st of April this year, and we haven't heard anything yet. Whether we'll have another post-lodgement conference, but it's typical that there are multiple. And following that, once they're satisfied, they'll give us direction to do public notification. We have chased up with them to see how we're travelling with respect to the other ones, and they haven't given us a time frame.
I think we'll go to Councillor Cordova, because you had your light on before.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My first question is, what are the next steps required for the development of an aquatic centre in the sports precinct?
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. We'll refer to Mr. Smee for that answer.
Through you, Acting Mayor, there is a draft report that has been workshopped with councillors. We now need to bring a report to council for the consideration of councillors in order to make the next steps.
Thank you. My next question is about the Kingborough Integrated Transport Strategy, or KITS, which was last updated in 2010. My first question about the Integrated Transport Strategy is, at present, is the KITS still Kingborough Council's main strategic planning document relating to transport and mobility in the municipality?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, that is correct.
Thank you. Next question is, to what extent have the recommendations in the KITS been implemented?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, some of them obviously have and some of them haven't. I'd have to look at it in a bit more detail to give you a bit more detailed list of which ones have and haven't. I'd probably add to it that it's probably got to its 10-year window where we'd probably be looking at putting a submission forward to Council to renew that particular strategy.
Thank you. And the KITS recommended that Council seek funding for a Transport Connections Coordinator position. Was any such coordinator appointed in the last decade?
Mr Reeve.
Through Acting Mayor, not to my knowledge. Certainly anything which was dealing with any of the strategic side of things would either be dealt with our engineering area or potentially through some of the strategic planning work as well at the same time.
Thanks very much. And the KITS also makes reference to a series of implementations that are the responsibility of the then Department of Infrastructure, Energy and Resources, and that department actually no longer exists. It was subsumed by the Department of State Growth in 2014. When that merger took place, did the Department of State Growth make any formal commitments to progress those action items for which they were responsible in the KITS? And if not, how much of the implementation plan that they were responsible for do you think fell by the wayside?
I suspect we might need to take some of those questions on notice.
That's okay. So, and just for context there, it was things like Department of State Growth, I assume, would be responsible for measuring before and after conditions of the Kingra bypass and improving the Channel bus service and things like that. When can we expect a new transport strategy?
Mr Reid?
Through you, Acting Mayor. So it is something that I'm actually looking at the moment there in terms of the framework we'd like to employ for it. They can be quite detailed things. We actually develop a strategy there with a lot of community input and consultation as well at the same time. It will rely on a budget bid to Council in the future there, but I'd be hoping to put that forward, not for next financial year, but the one after in the meantime there, just to undertake some of the prelim work on that framework.
Thanks very much. And my final question is just about, with the exception of the new park and rides at Huntingfield and Browns Road, have there been any significant improvements made to mobility and public transport, like the major projects within the KITS? How many of those, with the exception of Park and Ride, have been implemented since the KITS in 2010?
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Look, once again, I'd probably need to take it on notice to give you a better reply to it. There's certainly been lots of stuff that's actually been done in the intervening 10 years, both on our side and on Department of State Growth side. But it'd be nice to answer those specific questions with some fairly specific answers as well.
Thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Gray.
Sorry, with your indulgence, I'd like to ask three other questions.
Yes.
Thank you. Could the General Manager give us a report on why a meeting for the Rainbow Come Out Proud people that was scheduled at 4 o'clock this afternoon, a meeting in this building, obviously, according to the information I have, that there was no room booked?
Councillor Grace, that meeting was organised by Councillor Midgley, and Councillor Midgley has submitted an apology, and I will be requesting a leave of absence for this week on her behalf in closed session. That's why the meeting did not go ahead.
So she never made a booking, and that's the question.
I'm not sure whether she booked the room, I'm sorry, Councillor Grace, but
Could we be told whether she actually booked the room? Thank you. Sorry, Mr General Manager, did you? Yeah, I thought you would.
The reason the meeting isn't going ahead, Councillor Grace, is because Councillor Midgley isn't here, and she was the one who organised the meeting with one of our ratepayers and residents, and I'm sure that when she's back, she will reconvene that meeting.
Yeah, but I'd still like to know whether a room was actually booked for that, for today. Okay, that's important. Thank you. attending the meeting of Representative Trade and Purple, this is under the General Manager's report, this is a discussion regarding development matters. Are there problems over there, or is it running to schedule through you?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, no, Councillor Grace, there are no problems that I'm aware of. It's just one of many discussions that I have with developers in Kingborough, and as you're aware, Traders in Purple are one of our bigger developers now.
And just finally, I know you love this question, I noted you've had 1, 2, 3 more meetings with Metro. As you've stated, the bus shelter at Snug is not council property, but we never got a reply on the letter that you stated that you presented to the CEO regarding the two boys that lost their mother through breast cancer.
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Councillor Grace, that's correct. I have not received a reply from the CEO of Metro on that matter as yet.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. That's another question, Councillor Grace. Just need to turn your light on.
Are you expecting one, or is this just going to be put in the no basket?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Councillor Grace, I don't know whether I expect to get a response or not. As I've responded previously to the questions you've raised, it is not a council bus shelter. It's on a state road reservation, and I, following up at your request, sent an email to the CEO of Metro, and I have not received a response.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Bastine.
Sorry, I have one more question through you to the General Manager. It's regarding on page 55, the current and ongoing minute resolutions. We've had one on the books now for 4 years, the TASCEL Community Advisory Group. Anticipated date of completion unknown, but in fact it has never actually happened. Do you think we could just take it off the books now?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I think that's a very good suggestion, Councillor Bastow.
Thank you, Councillor Bastow. And Councillor Fox.
It's not really a question, but I'd like to comment on the fact that the NRM unit on page 349 of our appendix item D has had a name change to the Natural Areas and Biodiversity Unit. Even though that's a mouthful, I just want to say I think it's a very good idea, because there's been a lot of confusion in the community about NRM South and NRM Tasmania, whether the funding for our NRM unit has come from federal or state. And it's obvious now that it is actually a council unit and always has, and is fully funded by council, and all the staff that work for that unit actually work for council, much to council's credit. And I just wanted to make that comment on the recording.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. No more questions without notice from councillors. We'll move to questions on notice from councillors. Starting on page 4, we have a question from Councillor Bastone about Sharps Road, with an officer's response on page 4. We have a question from Councillor Midgley on the bin at Blowhole Road, with an officer's response. We have two questions from Councillor Bastone regarding spraying at the Kingston Park playground and abatement notices, with responses from staff on page 5. We have a question from Councillor Cordova on the removal of pine trees on Allen's Rivulet Road, with a response from staff. We have a question from Councillor Midgley regarding seating at Lunawanna, with an officer's response. Another question from Councillor Midgley on page 7 regarding community assistance grant, with an officer's response. A question from Councillor Bastone on page 7 regarding the Dens Point Cafe, with an officer's response on page 8. Another question from Councillor Midgley regarding youth services on page 8, with an officer's response. And two more questions from Councillor Midgley on page 9 regarding buses in Kingborough and electric vehicle charging stations, with an officer's response to both of those on page 9. With that, our open session adjourns, and the Planning Authority commences at 5:54 p.m. We start with, on page 10, Officer's report to the Planning Authority regarding a development application for a change of use from residential to visitor accommodation at 40 Flinders Esplanade, Taroona. Do I have a councillor to move the recommended motion? Thank you, Councillor Grace. Seconded by Councillor Street. Thank you. Councillor Grace.
Madam Chair, I have read the report and it's a very thorough report, given us all the details, and we only had three representatives, but I'm pleased to see that each of those representatives, in my opinion, got a fair answer for the question they raised. So, thank you.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. Just wanted to ask a question in relation to one of the representations, and that is on page 20, and it relates to figure 9. So there was an image that was taken from viewpoint 3, which is at the corner of the deck close to the pool, and it indicates here in the report that that does raise some concerns for privacy, but because it's an existing dwelling and just a change of use, that we don't have the capacity to ask the owner to, or the applicant to make any changes to that. I'm just wondering whether they're aware of whether they may be amenable to making changes voluntarily, if that's been discussed with them once they saw this report.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, Acting Mayor. Yes, the planner that was dealing with the application made contact with the applicant and raised the issues with them, including sort of suggestions of what possible outcomes there would be, but noting that we didn't have the power necessarily to cover it, and just to make them aware of the inclusion within the report and what the options were available to them, but they didn't make a firm commitment one way or the other.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have a question. Where the description is, and it says the lower floor of the dwelling contains a garage, living room, bedroom and toilet, but the diagrams show that the garage is in fact at the upper level, and I'm just wondering whether it's a mistake, or a mistake in the drawings, or a mistake in the description, because wherever the lower floor is mentioned throughout the report, it does say that the garage is at the lower floor.
Are you referring to the image on page 21, figure 7? Just for clarity.
Page 12 as well, it shows it, and on page 21.
Thank you. Ms. Tyler Moore, do you have an answer for Councillor Bastone?
Through you, Mayor, in figure 2 it does show the floor plan of the two. It's a it's a site that falls, so it's got a lower ground floor which has got the living bedroom and toilet, and the garage is accessed from the at-grade level, which, as you can see in figure 2, is shared with the dining, living, bedroom areas. The description, I'll have to go back and find it again, may be incorrect, but it's not detrimental to the decision that's been made whether the garage was on which level.
Okay, I can read you the description. The description says the lower floor of the dwelling contains a garage, living area, bedroom and toilet. And then goes on to say how this works. My other question is it possible that these people running visitor accommodation will run it as two separate units, and do we, because there is no internal staircase between the two sections, so are we likely to end up with actually two visitor accommodation units running here?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the application is only to run as a single visitor accommodation, and that's what we're approving.
Do you have a question, Councillor Grace? Councillor Fox.
Yes, I'm just interested in the item 2, the recommendation number 2B, be emissions of noise, artificial light, vibration, smells, fumes, smoke, vapour, steam, soot, ash, dust, wastewater or waste products, in brackets, rubbish. How can council police that, and is that enforceable?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, it would be responding to a complaint. We wouldn't actively go out and check it because we don't have the resource to do that. If we had a complaint where that was occurring, then we would have the ability to go and review it, see what's occurring, and it's enforceable. The planning scheme does talk about in the decision-making about the no effect on amenity. Whilst that's fairly loose in the planning scheme, it does give us that ability to do that enforcement.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I've got a question about the in Planning Directive 6, Clause 1A, B, visitor accommodation must have a gross floor area of not more than 200 square metres per lot. What is the intention behind that provision?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the State Government wrote it without reason as to why they changed it. It was previously 160 square metres and they changed it to 200 square metres. I'd be speculating, but perhaps to make it easier, I'm not sure. But it was just brought in by the State Government and we just implement the rules.
Yep, that's understandable. And so when was it brought in from 160? It's now 200. And we assume that's to make it easier, if I'm understanding correctly, that's to make it easier to change of use to visitor accommodation. Is this a relatively new change?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, testing my memory a bit, but it was in the last couple of years. I would have to come back to you on the detail about what the actual date was that it was brought in, but it was it was definitely pre-COVID, and perhaps a year before that.
That's okay. And so the proposal is to use the existing dwelling, which has a floor area of approximately 220 square metres for visitor accommodation, and therefore it relies on assessment against the performance criteria. It's been stipulated here in the report that the change of use does not adversely impact the privacy of adjoining lots. And we've also heard from Councillor Fox about the issues surrounding emissions of noise. To what extent... On what basis is that assertion that the privacy of adjoining lots will not be adversely impacted?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. This is a slightly difficult one because the building's already existing and the matters that the residents have raised are existing. Whilst I have every sympathy for that occurring, it is a difficult situation because of that matter. The reference to privacy generally is to do with overlooking. It's not to do with noise or fumes or any of those other matters. Privacy referred to in the scheme is always overlooking, and it's been determined that the overlooking isn't going to cause detriment to that property.
Thanks very much. And so just to conclude, I guess, with my substantive contribution here on this one, it is complex, but I do see in black and white that this particular proposal has a gross floor area of more than the allowed, which therefore, of course, means that it's up to the performance criteria. But in this case, I just respectfully disagree with the assertion that the proposed variation can be supported pursuant to this performance criteria. I don't believe that, all things considered, I don't believe that the privacy of adjoining lots won't be negatively affected, the amenity won't be negatively affected. And I also raise the point that the primary function of this area is residential, and the fact that this does not comply because it is larger than what is permitted, therefore on this occasion I will be voting against this proposal. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Grace, would you like to sum up? Lights on.
I believe it's been debated very well. I can't add any more to it.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Sorry, just to find the recommendation. Page 24, thank you, General Manager. Out of 357 pages, my note for this week. Moved by Councillor Grace and seconded by Councillor Street. the recommendation printed before us that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for change of use from residential to visitor accommodation at 40 Flinders Esplanade Taruna be approved, subject to 5 conditions. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
We have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Grace, Street, Bastone, Fox, Reet, Wass and Westwood, and those against? Councillor Cordova. The recommendation is approved. We now move to a development application for 30 multiple dwellings and a sign at 15 Home Avenue, Blackmans Bay. Do I have someone to move this, please? Councillor Grace, thank you, and seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Grace.
We've had lots and lots of debate regarding these multiple dwellings. I think the consultation, the amount of work that staff have carried out with the developers and with the property owners and so forth, I'm not quite sure what more council could have done. It's saying fairly clearly that it meets virtually all the dotted lines under our planning scheme. So I have no hesitation in recommending this to council, Acting Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just briefly, the reason that this report's coming to council again after already being approved at a previous meeting is that there was an omission of a TAS water condition in the conditions. So the matter has been well and truly debated already. We're now looking at that, the inclusion of that TAS water condition. I thank planning staff for their explanation around that and completely understand that sometimes these things just slip by and that's just the way it is, but I'm glad that we've been able to rectify it so quickly, so thank you for that, and commend the motion to my colleagues.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just, I guess, to elaborate on that point, there are many reservations that a number of us have raised, and I guess the initial change of the zoning took place before my time on the council, but of course all of that has been litigated beforehand. And, of course, this motion was before the council at the last public meeting, so it's worth noting that what we're looking at here is essentially a clerical error, for want of a better word, and it's almost like kind of a procedural vote, in essence. This was already passed last time, and this is not actually an opportunity to relitigate the pros and cons of the Mary Knoll development, for which there are many decent reasons both for and against, but in fact that time has come and gone, and this is now essentially a procedural vote to include the TAS water very standard conditions. And unfortunately, kind of an omission occurred at the last meeting, which meant that this couldn't go through, but we now have the correct forms in front of us, and so just to make it abundantly clear that this really isn't an opportunity for councillors, no matter what they think of that particular development, to have a say on it. This really is just rectifying an omission from last meeting. Thanks.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, just turn your light on.
As I wasn't at the last meeting, I knew it came up because I read the agenda, but because I wasn't present at the last meeting, am I able to still move this amendment?
Yes, you are, Councillor Grace. Okay. You've closed, Councillor Grace. You don't have anything to add? No. Thank you. So, yes, we have before us a recommendation printed on page 58 and on the screen in front of us that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for 30 multiple dwellings and sign at Presentation Sisters 15 Home Avenue, Blackmans Bay for JMG Engineers be approved, subject to 17 conditions. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried. Planning Authority adjourns at 6:09 p.m. Now we might just have a 5-minute break and come back at 6:15. Thank you everyone for that short break. We now come to notices of motion. Starting on page 97, there was a notice of motion put forth by Councillor Midgley. That has lapsed because Councillor Midgley is not here, but I am aware that she will represent this at a future date. We now move to the second notice of motion, submitted by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Cordova, would you like to move your motion? Do I have a seconder? Councillor Fox, thank you.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. During COVID, councillors approved a hardship policy which made provision for rates relief. Council's financial analysts provided their expert opinion that up to $500,000 might be required to pay these costs. The $500,000 was indeed an estimate of the potential financial impact on council and not a specific budget allocation, as is in the notes. Thankfully, this money went unspent, largely because businesses did better than they expected or than we expected them to do, and we can all be very thankful for that. However, councillors were assured at the time that even in the worst case scenario, that a financial allocation of $500,000 would not send the council broke and would be a manageable financial outlay. Each and every recent financial report that comes before council proves that our finances are in good working order and that we are a fiscally responsible council with considerable budgetary flexibility. Since this $500,000 was not expended, it has been chalked up to rates revenue, and it will appear in our books as an extra $500,000 in rates revenue, which is effectively being used to reduce the overall size of the deficit, quite a manageable deficit. Kingborough Council is a service organisation that's existed for some 117 years, and unlike a regular household or business, the council can levy rates, effectively setting its own income, and unlike a household or business, it can afford to take a longer term view. A council doesn't need to balance their books every single financial year, unlike an individual or a local business. When they take out a loan or a mortgage, they need to pay it off in 20 or 30 years because of the expected lifetime of that business or individual, but of course a council has a much longer life expectancy and as a result can get more favourable terms and afford to balance our books over a much longer time horizon. I am suggesting in this motion that we hold a workshop to discuss the possibility of using this $500,000 to some greater effect than just paying down deficit. For example, it was the staff at this council who kept the lights on and kept our operation going during the pandemic. We could decide to use this $500,000 to reverse the wage freeze decision that saw council staff wages frozen. If we were to give this money to staff, it could be spent in our local community and help build back our economy in a faster and fairer way. So we should think about allocating this money to a wage increase applied for this financial year to reverse the wage freeze decision. Other options that I have suggested include climate action in line with our predetermined strategies, or funding the first phase of our street tree strategy, which would be to undertake a street tree canopy cover mapping and analysis. Within a defined area, this would have not just benefits for reserve management, but also bushfire mitigation and strategic planning. Equally, we could choose from among any number of critical infrastructure projects that are lagging behind on our capital works plan, our community grants, or funding public arts projects, or designing the first stages of an aquatic centre for the sports precinct. There's public toilets, there's public open space. All these things require money, and people are waiting for these things to be done. These are the topics that we should be talking about at a workshop about what to do with the $500,000 that was earmarked for spending on COVID but ended up not being expended. Finally, to prove the point that our council can and could and should afford these things, I would like to point out remarks made in the last financial report on 17th of May 2021, where the public agenda read on pages 119 and 120 that our rates are $146,000 over budget, with the general rate being $107,000 over and the garbage rate being $41,000 over budget. Statutory fees and fines are $348,000 over budget, due primarily to planning fees being $330,000 over budget. User fees are $200,000 over budget. Grants recurrent are $419,000 over budget. Employee costs are $252,000 under budget. Materials and services costs are $218,000 under budget, primarily due to delays in the bushfire program and timing differences between budget and expenditure. However, other expenditure is $162,000 under budget, due primarily to less than expected legal costs, tourism costs, and timing differences. Dividends, importantly, are $308,000 over budget due to TasWater paying one quarter of their dividends. And grants capital is over budget by $5.05 million. Importantly, Council's cash and investments amount to $12.1 million at the end of April, which is up $5 million from the April 2021 figure due to increases in interest-free borrowings. In summary, we can afford to talk about this. We can afford it, and as a service organisation, we should deliver to our community. We should at least have a discussion about what to do with this $500,000 that never got spent on COVID relief, both this year and indeed next. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a few, or Acting Mayor, I should say, I have a few questions, please, to start off with. Acting Mayor, would the General Manager be able to provide advice, please, on whether the $500,000 was a budget allocation or whether it was an estimate of the impact, the worst-case impact that COVID might have on Kingborough Council's rates revenue?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Councillor Street, it was in fact the latter. It was an estimate of the impact that COVID might have on our rating revenue, and it was a major component of our estimated $2.4 million underlying deficit, which of course is now reduced by approximately $500,000.
Thank you. So, General Manager, to say that it's $500,000 of unspent money would therefore be incorrect?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Councillor Street, I would answer that question by saying that in reality, it is probably a good thing that this Council did not have to spend the money that was estimated it may have to assist our community. But I can only repeat that we're in the last weeks of this financial year, and the budget was set by this Council with an underlying deficit of $2.4 million. For all of the reasons previously outlined by Councillor Cordova, we are coming in better than expected, but still with an underlying deficit, we expect to be around $1 million.
Thank you. That was going to be my next question, General Manager, which was what is the current estimated underlying deficit? So $1 million. On that basis, General Manager, would it be fiscally responsible in the circumstances to extend that underlying deficit by a further $500,000?
General Manager.
Through Acting Mayor, it would not be a recommendation from the Chief Financial Officer, the Manager of Finance, or indeed the General Manager of this Council.
Thank you, General Manager. General Manager, what did the Auditor-General have to say about Kingborough Council's cash reserves when the last audit report was tabled in the Parliament?
General Manager.
Through Acting Mayor. Councillor Street, that auditor report was tabled on the 25th of March this year. And in essence, we were one of four councils that the auditor referenced. And the comment in our regard was that our cash to expense cover ratio was, and I quote, less than adequate.
Thank you, General Manager. Acting Mayor, I don't think I need to say anything more than what's been provided in the answer to those questions, and I thank the General Manager for answering them. It would be extremely fiscally irresponsible for this Council to expend $500,000 at this point in the budget cycle, $500,000 which was set aside
for the care and concern of our community when we thought that the impact of COVID upon their ability to pay rates would be far greater than it turned out to be. We should simply be grateful that that turned out to not be the case, and that our ratepayers did not need the extent of the support that we were expecting them to, and move on to next year's budget, knowing that that budget has been prepared on the basis of the estimated underlying deficit and not on the basis of the whim of council pumping a further $500,000 into that underlying deficit 3 weeks out from the next financial year.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Grace.
Yeah, I just have one question. The final hardship policy, and then we talk about the COVID-19 pandemic. These funds are not funds given to us by the state government to ease the situation on the COVID crisis, are they? Is this our own money that we put in? According to what I'm reading here with Mr. Tim Jones, our manager of finances, saying it doesn't even meet our long-term financial plan. That's so it's obviously our own.
It is, yes.
And the reason I ask that question, because if we did hand it over, we could be made to pay it back.
No, it's not money that has come from the state or the federal government. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Madam Acting Mayor. I'm not going to support the motion. The reason I seconded it so that we could get the facts and details and information in the report out onto the open, but I'm afraid I don't want to upset the long-term financial plan with an extra $500,000 that we would be spending. I don't think it would be financially appropriate. Thank you.
Just ask one more. Oh, sorry, Councillor Reid, did you want to go first? Just one question. I understand that Mr. Doole is bringing another report to council on the same subject, is he or not? Or did I hear that wrong?
No, I don't think that's right, Councillor Grace. We're talking about a notice of motion from Councillor Cordova. I don't believe that Mr. Doole has anything to contribute to that. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. Look, I was interested in hearing the contribution from Councillor Cordova, but having read the Auditor General's report, number 11 of 2020, that was tabled in March, it does not paint a very good picture of our finances, and I think it's something that we have worked very, very hard on over the last 2 or 3 years in particular, with the long-term financial plan and trying to stick to that so that we can bring us into surplus and we can then eventually do more. We are in the fortunate that we had been willing to spend the money that we put aside for rates relief if it was required by members of our community, and the call on it was not as we had expected. And I can only hope that that's because it was that individuals and some businesses were not as hard hit by the pandemic in our municipality than in others. So I do, like Councillor Fox, I want to make sure that we stick to the financial plan, because I think once we get back into surplus, then we can start to look at new initiatives, but I don't want to undo the work that we have worked very hard on over the last few years by opening ourselves up to a range of other things, just as, we shouldn't be making promises that we can't keep. And I'm afraid in this, it would be setting up an expectation that would then lead to significant other programs and expenditure down the track. So I don't support the motion, but I thank Councillor Cordova for bringing it to here.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. I also don't support this motion. I think it is misleading to present something that implies we have $500,000 that has not been spent, And I guess it links back to risk appetite, because I'm certainly not keen to increase or to leave a deficit for my children or grandchildren, insofar as the level of whether we need to or not. And I also had to look up one of your words, Councillor Cordova. It would be necessary to discuss the matter precipitously if councillors wanted to consider other choices for using these funds. Precipitously means hastily, hurriedly or rashly, and I'm not prepared to make any budget decision hastily, hurriedly or rashly on behalf of our ratepayers, so I don't support the motion. Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm sorry for that use of that word. This is just asking for a discussion. It's just asking for a workshop. That's what this motion does. And so if we say no to this tonight, then we are stopping the discussion in its tracks. Now, we all agree, just to Councillor Street's point, we all agree, actually, that this was an estimate of the impact that COVID might have. It was not a specific budget line item. But what it proved was that there was sufficient flexibility in the budget to be able to afford $500,000 of spending without causing a problem. Now, the $500,000 was indeed an estimate of the potential financial impact on council, but it is true to say that it was $500,000 earmarked for spending on COVID that ended up not being expended. And we also know that the state and federal government have both employed fiscal stimulus to kickstart the economic recovery, so we need to avoid an austerity bias, which I fear is what this council tends to do. I need to tackle that point of whether or not it's misleading. It is true to say that $500,000 was earmarked for spending on COVID this financial year. It was not spent. That is absolutely true. We could invest this money in reversing our workers' wage freeze with pay rises for this financial year. We could spend this money on any number of capital works investments, public toilets, stormwater infrastructure, public open space. And whilst we have heard from staff about recommendations to pay down deficit, it is the councillors around this table that set the budget. We have choices before us, but we just need to have the will to reverse the wage freeze or tackle climate action or get started on an aquatic centre in the sports precinct. We spend $1.2 million a year on turf maintenance, but now we pretend like we don't have the money, even though we had a figure of $500,000 extra that we could afford and we didn't expend. So it's quite clear that this money was earmarked for spending and it was not expended. Therefore, the money is available, even though it's not a specific budget line item. And I'm asking for us to have a discussion about what we could do if we chose to employ the use of those funds for a specific budget line item. And it is up to we, the councillors, to select what to do with the budget and set those budgets. So I think it is crucial, it's vital that we have this opportunity and that we don't get into an austerity mindset, that instead we follow the lead of the state and federal government and we invest to recover. And that's what this motion proposes to do.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. The motion before us is on page 99. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
No.
No. We have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Cordova, those against? Councillors Grace, Street, Bastone, Fox, Reet, Wass and Westwood. Motion is lost. We now move to petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned at this point in time. We'll say goodnight to Councillor Grace, who's heading off early, not feeling particularly well. Thank you, Councillor Grace. There are no petitions that were received in the last period, so we move now to officers' reports to council on page 100. The first report we have is the intention to make bylaws, with a recommendation on page 102. Do I have someone to move and second that recommendation, please? Thank you, Councillor Fox. Seconded by Councillor Bastow. Councillor Fox.
Just to say that we've been through the process of developing bylaws, and these ones need to be reviewed, so that's why we've put them on the table. So I think it's just a matter of process and timing and being ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Reed.
Thank you. I've got a couple of questions. On the first page there, it lists that there are currently four bylaws that all expire this year. And the last one is roads, parking and stormwater. But in the new bylaws that we've been provided with, there is no coverage of stormwater. Is there a separate item for that?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. Thanks, Councillor. The provisions of stormwater that were under the current bylaws is now being managed under the Urban Drains Act, and so the advice that was provided to us is that we no longer need to have them in the bylaw.
Okay, thank you. I've also got a question about under the Marine Facilities bylaw, just so that I can understand this properly. On page 112, well, it's 112 of the electronic copy anyway, so hopefully it's the same. Page 112, clause 19 of the Marine Facilities bylaw says that unless authorised by permit to do so, a person must not set up a stall or sell or offer for sale any goods, chattels, property or anything on any marine facility. Does that mean that fishing boats that are tied up at a jetty can't sell their seafood unless they have a permit? Is that the intention of that?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. In the event that the marine facility is obviously a council managed and run facility, then yes, that's correct. That would require a permit to undertake that commercial use.
Okay. So what if they're only doing it as a one-off? Like, I mean, we've seen circumstances in the last year because of COVID where fishermen have had to now come and, you know, sell their products that would normally go overseas, which has been a great bonus for everyone. Does this mean that any fishing boat that wants to then tie up would need to apply for they would need to apply for a permit to do that, even if they wanted to do it as a one-off or a couple of times to offload their catch?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. The intent of the bylaws is to, I guess in this aspect here, is to ensure that the community within reason have unimpeded access to the marine facility. So in that example that you gave, in the event that a person was going to tie up their boat for a period of time in order to make sales over the day, my opinion would be that that would then be impeding access to the community to that facility and in turn would then need a permit to do so.
So even if they were doing it as a one-off, you know, say they had a catch that they needed to sell before it went off, it would apply in that case. Because the fee for that is 610 fee units, and a fee unit is currently $1.65. So we're going to charge over $1,000 for a fishing boat that wants to sell its products that, because it's been impacted probably by COVID or for whatever reason, that seems quite exorbitant and stands out as a significantly, if you look at the schedule of prescribed fees on page 125, the leasing and the commercial use permits are also at $610, but this one just seems, there's no flexibility in it. That seems like it's a flat fee regardless of it's whether for a week or a month or a year.
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. No, I accept your point, and I think it's one of these that we could look at all matters on merit, and when we go to, in the event that the recommendation is successful tonight, and we could look at the review of the bylaws, it's something that we may be able to review as an example as a daily style fee or similar.
Thank you, because I think we know that it's been a problem with people within the fishing industry that they've had that issue. Moving to the Health and Environmental Services bylaw, in relation to the requirement to have a toilet facility where there's any building work being done, and I've checked the definition of building work that's on page 131 is quite clear, and a builder is quite clear, but what I'm not clear about, because the definition of building work is, you know, any sort of altering, repairing, you know, adding to a building, if you've got an owner builder who's doing their own work, would they also be required to have a port-a-loo on site? because that's, I hope I'm reading it wrong, but when I read it, because of the way it is written, that would seem to be the case. I'm hoping you're going to tell me no.
Mr. Basham?
Through you, Deputy Mayor. In the event that there's building work being undertaken on land and there's not appropriate facilities for a person to be able to use a toilet, there would be a requirement that, without looking at the in detail the bylaws here and now with your question, I'd be inclined to think that there'd be need to be some form of sanitary way of disposing of...
totally agree. My point was, if you're an owner builder and you're doing work on your own house, surely you can just use your own toilet. That's my question. You could, because...
Through you, Deputy. Correct.
Right,
yes.
Okay, good. Excellent. It's just that the way that the definition of a builder was written and the building work...
By the owner.
I just didn't want to make sure that we were getting a loophole there. On page 137, still in the Health and Environmental Services bylaws, we did have this discussion when we workshopped this, but I just thought, in case, since this is going out to the public, if we could just have some assurance under the general provisions clause 1I, remove a wheelie bin from the curbside within 24 hours of it being emptied by the curbside collection service. You may recall we had the discussion about the need to have some flexibility around that in the case of elderly people who can't get the bin in and out themselves and who are reliant on somebody else doing it for them, whether it be a home care worker or someone else. Can you just place on the record some assurance that that would...
Mr. Basham?
Through you, Deputy Mayor. Yes, definitely, as we've discussed, there's discretion with the enforcement of these bylaws, and that would be an example of where discretion and common sense would be used.
Thank you. Further along, it's just really minor, but on page 142, there's just a typo that in 25.1a, having an area of less than 2,000 square metres, the American spelling has been used of metres there. Sorry, it stood out to me. let me just check if I've got any others here, just a minute. I think that was all. I'll let somebody else go on just in case there's any others that I found. Oh, hang on. Sorry, no. There was one more question. This occurs in a couple of the bylaws, but I'll refer to page 153. Of the health ones, part 11, miscellaneous. Clause 59, expenses incurred. It says the council may rectify a breach of this bylaw, including any damage to council property, without ordering the offending person to undertake the rectification works. In what circumstances would that... Because I would have thought that the opportunity... you would want to give residents the opportunity to carry out the rectifying works themselves prior to undertaking it on their behalf and then billing them for it.
Mr. Basham?
Through you, Deputy Mayor. If the matters were minor and not of great effect to the community, I definitely agree we'd want to be providing the members of the community opportunity to, I guess, maybe undo the wrong or whatever may exist. But if it was something such as major roadworks that have been unlawfully undertaken and council wanted to control the manner in which they were restored, this is an example where we might rely on the exemption, because this exemption is generally, in my understanding, all the bylaws, a similar exemption.
Thank you. I'm pretty sure that's all I had. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. As I've already said to Mr. Basham, I have many to ask questions about, so I'll go on, and when you're all sick of my voice, you just sort of do a bit of a wave or something. Starting with the Marine Facilities Bylaw, on page 110, the repairing and maintaining of vessels, unless authorised by a permit to do so, a person must not carry out repairs or maintenance on a vessel while that vessel is on or adjacent to any marine facility. If you go to the Kettering Marina on any day, there'll be 20 or 30 people working on their boats. Now, I'm not talking about on the outside of their boats. I'm talking about tinkering with the inside, painting the inside, things like that. Is this bylaw against them, or is it...
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. I don't have the asset list, but I believe that's a privately owned facility. And if it's a privately owned facility, then it wouldn't be apparent to the Marine Services bylaw.
Okay, because there are many different owners of parts of the marina, but we are definitely all adjacent to the marina, if you know what I mean. So, and I think that this is what worries me. Now, if I keep going on, and signs and advertising material, many boats have for sale signs on them while they're swinging on their swing moorings. Refueling at a marina facility. In the Kettering Marina, we have refueling facilities there, and there's nowhere else to refuel your boat. So I'm wondering how this fits in also. That's on page 112.
Mr. Basham.
Yeah, through you, Deputy Mayor. In the event that it is a marine facility that is owned by council, and I'm just not aware. My understanding is that the marine facility is private at Kettering. I don't believe it's a council-owned facility, but I just don't have the information on me here and now to validate that. In the event that it's a privately owned facility, it would have a use permit,
right.
And that use permit, I'm making an assumption,
yep.
would cover activities such as that, and so they would then in turn be exempt from the requirements of this bylaw.
Excellent.
I think
that saves several questions for you.
Sorry,
I knew
to
you'd be able to do this for me.
Sorry to interrupt. I think Mr. Smee might have something to add, which might be helpful.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity, Acting Mayor. Council does not own any of the marine facilities within Kettering,
right?
Other than the boat ramp at Troll Bay.
Right.
In fact, the majority of council's facilities are boat ramps.
Right.
And all of the major facilities are owned by Mast or are privately owned. So, for example, the Margate Wharf, all of the marina structures at Kettering. So we really are only talking about a very limited number of marine facilities that apply under this bylaw, and they are the ones that are owned, maintained and managed by council, and the vast majority are boat ramps.
Right, thank you. Okay, if we go on to page 142 on the control of incinerators open air burning. In number 27, position of open air fires, must not position an open air fire within 30 metres of any dwelling on an adjoining property. There are many people with fire pits now in their backyards that are quite would not fit into that regulation, that would be closer than 30 metres to a dwelling.
Mr. Basham?
That's through you, Deputy Mayor. That's talking about open air fires, so a fire that's in the open air on the ground. The bylaw does provide an exemption for the EMCA regulations in relation to smoke regs, which includes a fire pit, which will be exempt from this bylaw.
Okay, thank you very much. On page 155, with the infringement notice offences, clause 10, it says that people are going to be fined for the proper use of their mobile garbage and recycling bins. I'm sure it's meant to read improper use.
I think you might be right there, yeah, Councillor Bastow.
Thank you. When we go on to page 167, planting and tending of vegetation. Plant includes you're not allowed to propagate, husband, water or otherwise tend to vegetation beside the road. Now, I'm wondering, does this mean you don't water nature strips and you don't plant plants around the base of the trees and things, which people seem to do as part of our beautifying plans?
Mr. Basham?
Through you, Deputy Mayor. Again, it's the enforcement of the bylaws themselves is discretionary.
Yep,
and the intent is to not have people create areas that I guess aren't in accordance with endorsed guidelines or something similar and create a hazard for the public.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it's that, but it's very some of them are really a bit picky. On page 168, under fires, number 15, a person must not light or allow to be lit or maintain any fire in or on any council land or recreation facility. Again, we have campfires at Gordon all the time. So is someone policing that?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. There's no active policing for campfires at Gordon. There have been complaints in the past of campers lighting fires and creating a nuisance, and when that complaint is made, council act appropriately with inside its resources.
Okay, thank you. On page 169, 19, storage of watercraft. Unless authorised by permit to do so, a person must not store, leave or abandon a watercraft on any council land or recreation facility. Does this include land that we lease from the Crown?
Mr. Basham?
Through you, Deputy Mayor. To the best of my knowledge, yes, it does.
So that people who leave their boats on Conyngham Beach and their jet skis on Conyngham Beach are in contravene of this bylaw?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, unless they have a permit or they have a use permit pursuant to land use planning and approvals, I'd be inclined to think yes.
Yeah, because there's a lot of boats along the water there. Sorry for all of these. The use of vehicles or riding horses on council land recreation facility. Many of our trails are marked for horse riding as well, but they are council land.
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. Sorry, you lost me with the clauses.
Oh, sorry. I'm on page 184 now. I'm setting on clause 22, use of vehicles or riding horses on council land or recreation facility.
It's through you, Deputy Mayor. My understanding of that clause is that unless the area is signed for that use, then you shouldn't be undertaking that use on the council land.
Okay, thank you. On page 198, wheels of vehicles to be clean. Person must drop, drive any vehicle or permit any vehicle to be driven into, over or on any road unless the wheels of the vehicle are first cleaned of any material adhering to those wheels. Anyone that lives in the country on a dirt road knows that this is an impossible thing to do.
A question?
Well, as a question is that I think that this one needs perhaps to be written slightly differently so that it doesn't apply to ordinary vehicles travelling on dirt roads and then coming out onto the highway.
Mr. Basham?
Yeah, thank you, Deputy Mayor. We'll take it on notice.
Thank you. Sorry about this.
Could I just make a comment on that one, or is that not allowed? Because I know from an environmental point of view, it's really important not to spread weeds.
Yes, I know.
And when people drive their cars on their own property and with mud all over them, I mean, lots of excavators and trucks and council vehicles need to be cleaned to stop the spreading.
Which is
of
why
weeds.
I'm saying it needs to be rewritten slightly, because for me, my wheels are always dirty. My road is incredibly badly potholed, as Mr. Reeve knows, and I would always be spreading mud out onto the Channel Highway. If we go on to page 203, the parking of vehicles, number 28, a person must park a vehicle wholly within one parking space. RVs do not fit into a single parking space, and we have no RV parking areas within Kingston.
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. There's an exemption under the Road Rules 2019 for vehicles such as RVs and all vehicles that have a trailer attached to them, and that they're just to park in the most practical manner.
Thank you. I think I've only got one more, which you must be very grateful for. It's the last on page 204, number 36. The use of skates and cycles. A person is not to ride a machine propelled by human power, which includes a bicycle, in a parking area during hours indicated by signs in that parking area. Well, if I'm riding my bike, which is would be fairly unusual, but if I was, I would ride to the top of Big W car park, or I might ride here into council chambers, which are all areas for cars to park. So I understand the meaning of it. It's so that people are not hooning around on it, but it actually prohibits people who are bike riders, and that's something that we're trying very hard to foster, I think, within Kingborough. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Firstly, I really do support that point made by Councillor Bastone concerning that these bylaws, it's now been clarified, do affect land leased from the Crown, so that people who leave their dinghies and boats on Conyngham Beach, for example, unless they have a permit, they should move them because they're damaging vegetation and causing coastal erosion. So I hope that there can be some more gentle encouragement to rectify that situation, including perhaps some signage. My questions are around the two issues that are regularly raised with me from community members are about cat management and also, of course, the proliferation of short-stay accommodation during a housing crisis in particular areas. So my first question relates to, I'm looking at page 139, it's page 10 of the Health and Environmental Services bylaw. Would regulations that required cats to be under control just like dogs, so it would make it an offence for uncontrolled cats to leave their owner's property, would that be a possible amendment by, for example, it says at clause 15 subsection 7A, it says clause 15 of this bylaw does not apply to a domestic cats or domestic dogs. Am I correct in my belief that if we passed an amendment to strike clause 15 subsection 7A, that we would have more capacity to stop people from allowing their cats to roam around the municipality, killing native wildlife?
Mr. Basham?
Through you, Deputy Mayor. I think the first point is that we have a cat bylaw, that type of amendment may be more appropriate to be put through that that bylaw. The reason that this is written in this manner here is, one, my understanding from the workshops that we're undertaking is that there wasn't an appetite for cats to be contained in this manner. But two, I think that as there is the Cat Management Act, the State Cat Management Act, and also the Dog Control Act, council trying to put provisions in excess of what those acts allow could be contrary to law.
Would that be tested? So we would have to make the bylaw or make the amendment for that to be tested. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. It's something that we'd take advice on.
Well, if I'm reading the room correctly, I think that there probably is an appetite to do some more about cat management and using the provisions that we've got in the bylaws to strengthen our position when it comes to cat management.
Councillor Cordova, I think our General Manager would like to add something.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Councillor Cordova, you'll note from the recommendation that what has been recommended in this report is to commence community consultation. We hear what you're saying, and I think that if the council support this recommendation, that will enable the officer to get some advice on that matter and address all of the other matters that have been raised as well during the period of consultation, because a further report will have to come back to council.
Thank you, General Manager.
Thank you very much for that. That does clarify things, and so to make it abundantly clear, I for one support much stronger cat management in the municipality. We are leading the way, and I think we can always do more, and particularly for areas like Peter Murrell, with so many houses going into Huntingfield, it's absolutely crucial that we protect our native wildlife from cat predation. But of course there's so many human ramifications with toxoplasmosis and things like that. So that's great that as this progresses, and I'll be happy to support this motion in order to further that conversation and hopefully really strengthen the leverage that we have to enforce cat management. My second question was around in some areas where there are, I think from the top of my head, Kingborough has something like 270 whole dwellings in short-term accommodation. There are some places where there are lots and lots of short-term accommodation areas in amongst a housing crisis where rentals are very hard to find. Where within the bylaws would caps on short stay accommodation in areas that are facing housing crisis, where within the bylaws would that fit?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Acting Mayor. As you're aware, we don't have anything in our bylaws currently drafted in concerning that matter. My initial thoughts would be that that's governed by the planning scheme, and that the planning scheme alone would be the document which would govern where that use can occur. But I guess just to reiterate the General Manager's position, when it does go out for consultation on the certificates being granted, that may be a matter that's brought forward.
Thank you. I guess just one further question around that is, I'm fairly certain that the Premier said that this is a matter for for local governments, but I've asked many questions around this table to which I've heard the retort that it's a state government issue. So again, I think it's one of those areas where potentially we just need to, like Battery Point has, lean in, like Byron Shire has, lean in and cap, or you know, make some provision and then test that. So I guess my question is, that's really more of a comment, I think, that I just think we should test that because it seems like buck passing.
Point of order, Acting Mayor, and I don't want to interrupt Councillor Cora, and I apologise. I just think that Mr. Basham might have been misrepresented there, because I think what he actually said was that it was a planning scheme matter, not that it was a state government matter, which would be a different thing.
Thank you, Councillor Street.
I'm happy to withdraw that for clarity's sake, but it is the prerogative of the state government to amend the planning scheme. So we should do that. That's the point that I'm making, is that there's space within the bylaws, or indeed within the planning scheme, to fix this problem, which is an apparent problem. Does anybody want to clarify that position for me?
I think at the moment we're talking about the bylaws. Yeah.
That's okay. So I've made my 2 points. One is that we can strengthen cap management, and the second is that we could do something about short stay accommodation during a housing crisis. Thanks.
Thanks, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Reet, did you have...
Sorry, yes, there's another question that I just wanted to ask. Page 203 of the Roads and Parking Bylaws, there's a whole lot of clauses here, starting at Part 3, about... the speed at which you can drive in parking areas, where, how you park, how you pay your fee, your vouchers, maximum period, and don't park in reserved spaces. What I don't see is any reference to disabled parking spaces, and particularly directing people not to park in them. It just seems like a strange emission when we have a whole lot of other things there and not that in particular. And I know, given that we've got the Access Committee meeting on Wednesday, if I did not raise this, they would not be very happy. So I feel like that's just an emission. I don't know whether you want to comment on that.
Would you like to comment, Mr. Basham?
Through you, Deputy Mayor. The disobeying disabled parking is a specific offence with Inside the Road Laws 2019. And would be relevant to any parking area. So it can be controlled.
So there's no need to add it in here at all. Okay, thank you.
Councillor Bastow.
Sorry, I have one more question, really following on from what Councillor Cordova said, and it's probably for Ms. Tasha Tyler Moore. Could we use a bylaw to enforce extra water tanks on properties that are used as Airbnb when they're on when they're not on town water?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, I'm not in a position to make comments about the bylaws and how they're written. It's not something I work under. I work under LUPA. So I'm not in a position to be able to make a comment about it. Sorry.
Okay, well, can I phrase it slightly differently then? Under the planning scheme, we cannot force people who are on tank water to have extra tanks if they've got holiday accommodation or short-let things. Is that right?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, it's not relevant to the matter that's on that you're considering on the agenda now, but I'm happy to follow up. I have answered this previously. There's not much there, but it's not relevant to the bylaw discussion.
Yep, because I wanted to then ask if it wasn't possible, could we put a bylaw in about it and then ask Mr. Basham? That was all I was trying to get around.
Mr. Basham, would you like to comment?
Through you, Deputy Mayor. Thank you, Councillor. This matter I've already taken advice on previously. And no, we don't have the ability to be able to police that exact provision under a bylaw.
Thank you. So the motion that was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Bastone is before us on page 102 and printed on the screen. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. We now move to page 259, Coffee Creek Hydraulic Assessment. Do I have someone to move and second this report, please? Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Reid. Thank you, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. This was a really fascinating report, and so what we're looking at here is basically providing a summary of the Coffee Creek Hydraulic Assessment undertaken for the Kingborough Council and to seek endorsement for the recommendations from the study. Basically, the Coffee Creek catchment covers a large area, some 700 hectares, covering Kingston, Huntingfield, Blackmans Bay and the Peter Murrell Conservation Area, and it drains into the North West Bay. This is a really comprehensive report, and I guess to allay some of those fears, what is interesting is that there are erosion hotspots that have been identified, but in terms of the actual properties that are at risk of flooding, they are... I might just pause at this moment to ask, how many properties was it that are actually at risk of flooding?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I don't think there was any properties that were directly at risk of flooding. I guess the only comments made in the report there is that there's obviously some future development that will actually happen within those catchments there, and we would need to look at each of those developments on their own merits as well at the same time.
Thanks very much. So basically, I guess, in a nutshell, what we're looking at here is with all of this urban growth that's taking place, there's more sediment travelling down the river, there's more risk of damaging riparian zones, more risk of harming the aquatic organisms that depend on this environment, and also there's potential significant human consequences when that takes place. So in order to plan appropriately, as we see because of anthropogenic climate change, more frequent storm events, we see more frequent things like what we experienced in 2018, having plans like this in place really allows us to strategically plan and to make sure that development happens in accordance with environmental values. So future development in the catchment based on the current planning scheme may cause a significant change to flood behaviour at three locations. One is located north of Algona Road. Hotspot two included the tributary west of Nautilus Grove and a section of Coffee Creek. And then hotspot three, located south of Heron Pond and is a result of the Huntingfield development. It's a really fascinating report, and it will be, my understanding is, published. It will be published on the council website, and so I wholeheartedly endorse it. And I also really wanted to speak to the bigger picture here, which is that having information is power, and in an age of climate change, we really need to make sure that our communities are made resilient, and the best way to do that is to have the knowledge at our fingertips, and so that's why this is such an important development. So I thank the author and the authoriser of this report. Cheers.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. So we have so is that summed up as well as moved, Councillor Cordova, if we don't have anyone else? Thank you. So we have before us a recommendation on page 262. It's printed on the screen before us. Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Reid. All those in favour, please say aye. All those against? Motion is carried unanimously. We now come to community grants. I'll just check. No one wants a break? Okay. Moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Reid. Thank you, Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor.
The report before us is for the consideration of the second round of Council's Community Grants Program. The process by which this occurs is in accordance with Council's policy. Applications are requested and then they're reviewed in depth by staff, and the result of that review is the list of grants that we have before us in the report, and I thank staff for the work that they've done in assessing those applications and providing advice about the amounts to be allocated to each. As you can see, the requested grant funding exceeds the amount that we have available in the second round, but without wanting to verbal Dr. Stevenson, she has made reference that they did do a very in-depth assessment of these applications, and the result is the amounts before us, and certainly I'm happy to take the advice of staff on that matter. Finally, I thank every organisation that's put in an application for making that application, and not to be discouraged if the request wasn't met or if the total request wasn't met. The only thing that I would encourage every organisation that has put an application in and every organisation that puts an application in future is to have a discussion with Council staff before they put the application in, so that we can always make sure that it is in line with the guidelines and it has the best chance of being funded. I look forward to, in the future, having a review of the Community Grants Program. I think that, that would be a good thing, and I know that we've discussed it previously, doing that, and I look forward to further work in that area as well. And I thank staff again for the report.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Not 100% sure who had their light on next. Councillor Reid?
I think I did. Don't think anyone else did. I echo the comments by Councillor Street, and look, selecting successful grant applicants is not an easy job, and neither are writing grant applications, because I know it's one of the things that I do in my other line of work, and a lot of work goes into them, and it's it can be quite challenging. That does lead me to think whether there is an opportunity at some stage to run a workshop for some of our community organisations to actually understand a little bit more about grant writing, because some of them may not have those skills. We do it already, do we? Good. Okay. Excellent. It was a great idea of mine, though. but I did want to just ask, I know that Dr. Stevenson is not here, but I wanted to ask about the Boronia Girl Guides Hall driveway resurfacing. It's not recommended for funding. They had requested $3,000. I'm familiar with that particular location because my daughter went to guides there, and I ran the gauntlet of that driveway like every other parent has many times, and it had some of the biggest potholes that I think I've ever seen. Now, my recollection is that a few years ago we actually transferred the ownership of this building to the guides. So correct me if I'm wrong on that, but that was my recollection from quite a few years ago. The condition of the driveway at that time was pretty poor, because it was at that time that my daughter was going there. It's obviously eroded further since then, and it concerns me that the Girl Guides, which, you know, are not a wealthy organisation by any stretch of the imagination, are now stuck with a difficult problem of being able to fully fund the works that are needed there. And I'm just... Dr. Stevenson isn't here, so I'm not quite sure who I'm asking this to.
Mr. Smee.
Thank you.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I did sit on the assessment panel for these grants, so I am able to answer questions if councillors have any. The issue with the Girl Guides application was they didn't have the matching funding that is required under our criteria. they did indicate that they intend to undertake some fundraising in order to obtain the matching funds, but at the time of the application, they don't have them. So what we are suggesting is that their application otherwise complies, reapply next round, when hopefully they will have those funds secured. So we certainly acknowledge that this is a an application that could be supported under our grant program, but they do need to have the secured matching funds.
Thank you. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. Can I just reassure Councillor Reed that the Kingborough and Huon Business Enterprise Scheme runs workshops for community grant writing? And the driveway at Boronia Guide Halls is terrible. I drive the Louis van in there on Thursday nights to park it, and it's appalling. What I want to know is about the Bruny Island Environment Network. We have recommended that they get $550 for hall hire. Are we not just doing this in kind and not charging them for the hall, or are we actually giving them $550 to hire the hall from us?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the Adventure Bay Hall is managed by a Hall Management Committee who retain the funds. So if Council waive the fee, the Hall Management Committee miss out. So we do like to provide a grant to cover the cost of the fees, because bearing in mind that the Hall Management Committee need to pay the bills on the hall, so that's the reason we don't simply waive the fee when there's a hall that is managed by a local management committee.
Thank you. And could I also ask Mr. Smee about the Kingston Tennis Club? We just a small part of the grant wasn't granted. Is this because we ran out of money, or was there something in their grant that you didn't want to give them the money for?
Through you, Acting Mayor, it was the former. This was the last grant we approved, and in order to meet the available funds, we had to reduce it accordingly.
Councillor Fox?
Just generally, I was wondering if we have nil next to the applications. I presume, or I wonder the question is, do they get a detailed explanation why there is nil? And particularly I'm interested in the 10 Lives Cat Centre, why there's a nil in that location.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, all unsuccessful applicants do receive correspondence from Council with the opportunity to contact staff to discuss the reasons why their application was unsuccessful or could be improved in the future. In relation to the 10 Lives Cat Centre, the assessment was that the request was largely operational in nature. Whilst the work that the 10 Lives Cat Centre does is excellent, the actual education program was deemed to be one that is of an ongoing nature, and our criteria is such that we don't fund recurrent operational costs, and this educational program was deemed to be fit into that category, and that was the reason it wasn't recommended.
Councillor Cordova.
Thanks very much. The Kingborough Community Missions, can I have just a little bit more context around that one?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, that was another example of an excellent program that does provide wonderful value within our community. However, once again, it is a recurrent program, it's an ongoing program, and our criteria doesn't allow funding of programs that occur on an ongoing basis. There'd need to be a new element to that program before it could be supported.
Thank you. My next question is about Kingborough Gymnastics and the upgrade of a pommel horse and safety padding for gymnasts. That's got nil next to it, and it was a requested amount of $3,000. What was the reason for that one?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, that particular application did meet most of the criteria, bearing in mind that our main criteria relates to community benefit, but it was felt on balance that safety padding really is something that's operational in nature. You know, it's not adding new equipment for the community to benefit from. It's existing safety padding really is an operational expense that should be met by the applicant. In other circumstances, if we weren't oversubscribed, we may have been able to fund that one, but in a very competitive grant round, it was unable to allocate any funds to that.
Thank you. And my next question is about the with the Kingston Beach Golf Club, the club room heating and electrical upgrade. Was there a reason that that got nil?
Mr. Snee?
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. The same comment again. It's considered to be an operational expense, maintaining club rooms and putting in a heating system are fairly everyday operational expenses associated with managing a facility, and that's the reason it wasn't supported.
Thank you. So I will just speak as briefly as I can. I will be voting for this because obviously I don't want to deny, you know, anybody these vital community grant funds. But I have raised, and I'll raise again, the urgent need for us to rectify the situation where the grant total is currently at $40,000 for the financial year. It used to be $60,000 and it needs to return to $60,000 because we oversubscribed and there are terrific community organisations who are missing out on funds simply because it's such a competitive process now. But it doesn't need to be a competitive process. That is a choice that the council is making to withdraw funds from community organisations that would greatly benefit from their capacity. Every dollar that they don't have to spend on safety matting for the athletes there, they could be spending doing something else. For every dollar that we give to the Bruny Island Environment Network for the assistance with the Bird Festival, instead we're just giving them hall hire, but they ask for $3,000 and that would greatly increase their capacity to do great work that pays community dividends. So right now, you know, the Boronia Girl Guides, that's another example where this needs serious reassessment, our criteria. A good idea is a good idea regardless of how much money the organisation has in their bank account. And right now we're denying some of these wonderful community organisations funds simply because they can't afford the matched funding criteria. Well, there's an example of where the criteria needs to change because we, the council, are a service delivery organisation and we need to be providing capacity building for these amazing community organisations. They're run by volunteers who go over and above beyond the call of duty, and we should be encouraging them as best we can with adequate resourcing. Something else, I mean, the example of it's operational in nature so we don't fund it. Well, let me read out. The Kingborough Community Missions project was a short-term food relief for disadvantaged people in Kingborough, and they didn't get any money. That's an incredible project that absolutely deserves funding, and just because it's operational in nature does not mean that we should be denying them that funding. The South East Tasmanian Aboriginal Corporation wanted assistance with their Healing Country Festival on Bruny Island, and we've given them money this time saying that it's on the understanding that it's once-off support because we don't support operational things. Well, if it's a good idea, it's a good idea. And if it benefits the community, that's exactly what the community grants should be for. So we need to immediately, as a council, rectify this situation, increase the community grants to $60,000, increase the amount of the quantum that people can apply for, the minimum and maximums, and reduce the red tape when people apply so that if you've already got a relationship with the council and we know that they're an established community organisation that does great work, you should have an easier pathway to getting grants. Right now, the criteria are too strict, they are not sufficient, the amount of money that we're providing, and as a result, we've got this highly competitive grant round which leaves some community organisations who are doing good work out in the cold. We absolutely must do better than that. And before I finish, I'd just like to say thank you to all these community organisations for the work they do and the people who put in so many hours to make our community a great place to live. I have the utmost admiration for them all. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Street, would you like to wrap up? No. The motion before us, recommendation before us, moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Reet, is that Council approve the allocation for funding as outlined in the attached table. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried. We now move to page 266, Riverdale Road walkway access. Do I have someone to move and second this, please? The recommendation is on page 268. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
This is quite a complex motion before us, and I've actually walked the area and appreciate how complex it really is. It's probably well explained in it's fairly well explained in the documentation, and I'm pleased that we've got. Mr. Reeve? Would he be able to elaborate on this, or Mr. Smee? Sorry, because it's basically a rearrangement of property where a landowner owns land on both sides of the river, of North West Bay River, and council's made a decision to put a pathway on the western side of the river rather than the eastern side, or the northern side rather than the southern side, depending on the curving of the river. This particular landowner owns land on both sides of the river, and he would like to incorporate our public open space as a lease into his own property for 10 years with an opportunity to review that for another 10 years after 10 years in exchange for letting us have a 5-metre strip of land on the other side of the river, which is a lot more accessible and is part of our long-term project to put a walkway on that side of the river. And there's a lot of natural values on the other side of the river too, which are much more intact. On the property side of the river, there are quite a few water pipes running down to the river for irrigation purposes, which are vulnerable to people tampering with them, of course. But also, it might well be an opportunity to have a better walkway on the other river, which is leveller and nicer to walk, and also has the potential for trails to be made for both horse riding and bike riding. So that, I think, is my summary of it, but I'd be very keen if Mr. Smee would like to add anything that I might have missed.
Mr. Smee, would you like to add anything?
Through you, Acting Mayor, just very briefly, this is about implementing the North West Bay River Trail. The report recommends that the trail go on the northern side. As you can see in the map, this particular section, there is no riparian reserve, and obviously to secure public access over private land, we require an easement. That easement does come at a cost, and in this instance, what the proposal is that we offset that cost against the rental that the private landowner would otherwise pay for leasing our little bit of land in front of his property. So this is something that staff have worked with over the best part of 12 months now to achieve this outcome, and we're pleased that we're able to bring it here to council tonight. There is a development application in for stage one of the North West Bay River Trail, and this will decision of council tonight will enable that development application to be processed, and next financial year we do have funding to proceed with the implementation of stage one, which will go through this particular location.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Acting Mayor. I'm always so excited when these things about the North West Bay River come along. It's such an important area. It's critical for cultural and natural values, and this will be a legacy that we will all be a part of, creating something wonderful for the whole community. So I'm pleased to hear that staff have found what is quite an elegant solution to a complex problem. My question is about so this is supposed to be on the north of the river. There is, I can see on the map there on page 266, the wedge-tailed eagle nest that is up there. I just wanted to make sure that whilst, you know, alternative routes were considered, it being on the north side of the river, are there any comments around that wedge-tailed eagle nest and whether or not it will be disturbed or there's a risk of disturbance?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, what I will say is that we have a development application in that will assess all impacts on natural values. This particular, going on the northern side, where there is a cleared section of land, does obviate the need for tree removal, but there would be a more detailed assessment through the DA process.
Thanks very much. I look forward to the next stages of this and making sure that we keep environmental protection and conservation at the forefront of our mind, but also this really truly is an incredible opportunity and a great project, so I'm really pleased that it's progressing well. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox, would you like to sum up?
Yes, I failed to mention the fact that I initiated the North West Bay River Catchment Committee in the early 90s, and this is a really significant moment because I feel that by passing this motion tonight, which I hope we will, it's the beginning of actual action on the ground by Council to achieve the long-term goal of this people who live in this community. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. So the recommendation we have before us is printed on page 268 and on the screen in front of us, moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. We now move to page 269, moved by Councillor Reet and seconded by Councillor Fox. Thank you, Councillor Reet.
Thank you. We have this back before us after some discussion at the last meeting where we deferred it. There were a number of issues that were raised by councillors that have now been addressed in the report. I had raised the issue of having seats with a centre armrest because I know from the work with the Access Committee that they express a need for, you know, particularly people who have significant arthritis and other physical issues, that they need two armrests to get themselves out of the chairs, out of the seats. So I'm very pleased that whilst we're not doing it on all of them, that there are going to be some that are going to be customised to have that included amenity. So I appreciate Mr. Donnelly including that. There was also in this new report quite a significant discussion about the procurement policy and how we've come as a council to select these particular seats, because my recollection is that Councillor Bastone had raised concerns about why we're using these from interstate. There's quite a significant explanation there about the fact that these are the standard ones that we have everywhere, and so we have a stockpile of spare parts and components or can replace whole assets if need be. As the need arises if they're damaged. So I know from having had some communication from members of the Taruna community who had lobbied to have this put forward that they are really keen to see this happen. They didn't want to have it further delayed. So I thank Mr. Donnelly for the further report, and I'm happy to move the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Reet. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I spoke to the people from the Taruna group on Saturday at the Kingra Forum about this particular seating, or about this particular idea. The request for the additional seating was made by an elderly member of the community, one member of the community, on behalf of other elderly users. There are already seats within the park, although not well arranged. I just draw people's attention to the fact that in Kettering, 289 people signed a petition to have the safety footpath made. We have been trying to get this done now for over 10 years. We've had engineering drawings done from this council. We've put in applications. It has now gone to the governor, who's put it
Councillor
to Parliament.
Councillor Bastone, we're talking about Taruna.
Yes. What I'm saying is that with this large number of people, we've not been able to get anywhere. But an elderly gentleman asked for more seating, and it's been granted. Now, I feel that there's some discrepancy here in the way people are being treated. So I did speak to the people from Taruna about this, and while they are now supportive of it, they were originally not supportive of it. It does say that later paths might be made. At the moment, these are going to be around the area, and I can't support it for the reason I think this is not a fair use of public open space money. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Fox.
I also attended the Kingborough Consultative Forum on Saturday and overheard the chairman of the Taruna Environment Network saying that she felt it was inappropriate that an individual come to council with a proposal without going through the Taruna Environment Network. But I disagree. I think it's really important that people feel they have the right and the privilege and the freedom to ask the council staff for something which is professionally assessed by staff in a holistic manner in terms of the public open space funds, in terms of the Taruna's needs, the park itself and the benches that are lacking, and the merit of the situation. I don't think that any progress association or environment group has the sole right of proposing projects. And I know other areas where individuals have come up with ideas and put them forward without going through active or non-active groups. So I commend the gentleman who's put this forward and has been talking with elderly people who may not attend meetings or go to group meetings, but they are still able to have access to council staff and council assets and facilities. So obviously it's been very professionally assessed, as we saw in the first report, and again, considering all the comments that were made at the meeting, last meeting, they've all been addressed and come up. The staff have come up with good, solid arguments and reasoning to support the suggestions in many cases, and in other cases to explain to us better how their processes work. So we've all learnt, I feel, I've learnt a lot from this whole process, and I think this is a very good outcome, and I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Briefly, this is a good idea, and a good idea is a good idea, and it's not a zero-sum game that we need to choose one or the other. But I think Councillor Bastone raises a crucial point about equity and about improving Kettering, and I am going to vote for this. I'm talking about Taruna.
Yep.
Thank you. And I am going to vote for this, and I actually do appreciate that Mr. Donnelly has come back with some extra information which clarified the points that that we were asking questions about at the last meeting. But of course, yeah, at the end of the day, it's a good idea, and I think the people will benefit, not just the residents in Taruna, but those people who come to visit as well. So I do endorse this motion, but I also pay heed to Councillor Bastone's point about equity.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Reid, would you like to sum up?
No.
So the recommendation before us is on page 272, moved by Councillor Reid and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
All those against? We have a division. Those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillors Street, Street, Fox, Cordova, Reid, Wath and Westwood, and those against, Councillor Bastone. Motion is carried. Now move to page 278. Let's check we're still okay to keep going. Yep. Page 278, declared greyhound exercise area. The recommendation on page 279 and over the page to 280. Do I have someone to move? Thank you, Councillor Reet. And second, thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Reet.
It's a strange day when I move anything to do with dogs, really, isn't it? I'm normally putting up my hands about cats. Look, this has been out for public consultation to have an enclosed greyhound exercise area up at the dog exercise place that we have up near Kingston View Drive. There were quite a few, I think 13 I read somewhere, 13 submissions that were received in relation to this. There were some that were supportive. There were others who were concerned about the size of it. But I think that in the report that has been provided, that what has been indicated is that we'll see, we'll, there have been some changes made, like the middle barriers coming out. We'll see how it operates and make further changes if necessary. I think that's a sensible decision in this case. I don't think I need to say anything more about it.
Thank you, Councillor Reet. Councillor Fox.
I respect and understand that there's been a lot of consultation on this issue, but I am concerned because I know that greyhounds eat puppies. They will chase any moving animal, especially small ones that run, and they will kill them, basically. And I just am concerned that it's too close to a puppy training area. I don't know if anybody's raised that. I happen to live next door to a greyhound and I know how they behave. I keep my cat indoors 24/7 because of that greyhound, and I know that, I don't want to say any names because you all know my address, but I know that they eat chickens and anything that moves. So they have to be contained, and really seriously contained. And I'm just hoping that the design of this pen will not allow a dog to misbehave.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My question is about the speed at which... So it seems like the intention here is to, by having a small size of the enclosure, the advice is that the size is designed to inhibit the speed of the greyhounds, and further the internal barriers within the exercise area are also to further reduce their speed within the area. Can I just get some clarification about why it's so important to inhibit their speed?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Initially, with the consultation that we done with GAP approximately 6-12 months ago, the Greyhound Adoption Program, the biggest risk that they identified was the speed of that the greyhounds move. One for other users, being a greyhound running into someone and knocking them over, and the second was for their ability to stop and not run into something and injure themselves. So that was the overall intent of the initial barriers in the centre. After the consultation process, you can see that we've changed the outer fence now to not be a wire fence, it may still be wire, but the end result is that it's coloured and it's smaller gauge so that they should be able to visually see that as a barrier now. So that the intent is to stop injury.
Thank you, that makes sense. So just very briefly on my point, it is that the consultation has been extensive, and I was actually, I think it probably speaks to my ignorance about the issue, that looking at the submissions, I found it very interesting that there were some greyhound owners who were opposed to it because they wanted their dogs commingling with other dogs and that they thought it should be larger. On balance, I just have to rest with the experts there and with the association, and clearly there's been a great deal of engagement that's taken place, which should be applauded, so I will be voting in support of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I was wondering if, through you, if I could ask Mr. Basham if greyhounds still had to wear muzzles in public?
Mr. Basham.
Where a greyhound has been through the appropriate process, they are then via either GAP or any other approved area by the director, they're then exempt from wearing a muzzle. in a public place.
Thank you.
Thank you. For my contribution, I have spoken to some various greyhound owners who have expressed differing views because some of them would like their dogs to be integrated in with the rest of the dogs in the dog park. But on balance, they support having an area for their dog because it gives them an area to run and exercise. And I'm aware that this is, I think, only the second area in Tasmania and that we have people who are prepared to travel from Greater Hobart and around to come down to our Kingston View Drive dog park area to use the dedicated greyhound exercise area. And I think it's a really good, thoughtful thing to do for owners of greyhounds. So I also support this motion. So the recommend... Oh, should I ask Councillor Reek, would you like to sum up? No. Thank you. So the recommendation before us on page 279 and 280, moved by Councillor Reek, seconded by Councillor Bastone. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried. We now move to page... 285, rates and charges policy. Do I have moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Reed? Thank you, Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. We have before us the review of the rates and charges policy, which is due. Most of the amendments could best be described as clerical. The only substantive change is to section 5.6, where we're adding organic waste collection as Council's made a decision to now offer that service. So on that basis, I commend the motion to Council.
Thank you, Councillor Street. With that, we have a recommendation before us on page 286. Moved by Councillor Street and seconded by Councillor Reed. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion is carried. That brings us to the end of our open session of Council. Thank you all at home for listening, and to those who came in, thank you very much. Our open session will finish at 7:46. Confirmation of items in closed session. We have a recommendation on page 298 that we go and move to closed session for confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, COVID-19 rental relief and rate rebate for conservation covenants. Do I have someone to move that? Thank you, Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Street. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? We will now move into closed session to deal with those items. Open session adjourns at 7:47 p.m.